Marshall from getting into car crashes and flying out of the front windows into fucking pavement, slinging weed and getting kicked out of school and shit like that. Running X.
Yeah.
And now you find yourself part of this elite group of people getting this training. You were laughed at when you got out of prison when you told them you were going to be a SEAL. Mm-hmm. And now you're about to deploy for the first time. What's your first deployment?
We went to Yemen.
This is what year?
2013.
Bee's nest.
So it was, you know, it wasn't obviously super hot. It was a gray insert. So we're, you know, flying in at night and then pretty much riding ATVs off the back of, you know, an old Russian airfield.
It's not hot out there, but you're doing shady shit in shady places, and there's
no uniforms, no base.
Who's your backup? The dudes there?
Us eight dudes, man.
That's about it.
Yeah. So we had eight. There was, I think, 13 guys, SEALs allowed in country. We had a few at the embassy, you know, in a little bit south. And we were kind of in the middle, growing a beard and getting weird by ourselves on this small little fob, for lack of a better word. But it was, you know, living in tents, living in Alaska tents, and kind of building out this little base that ended up getting overrun by the Houthis about a couple of years later. But, you know, sitting watching the sniper tower, building out a little Osprey landing zone and training the counterterrorism unit, a little bit of FID and stuff like that, foreign internal defense.
So you're basically there trying to augment the local forces, making a space for yourself there, but you're really out there.
You're out there. I mean, they were like, careful of those scorpion death walkers. They're like, you know, there's no anti-venom. If something happens, our closest life flight was 8 hours, man. It was like to Djibouti. So we were out there.
And going from your past life to that,
a moment. I remember it clearly.
What was that moment for
you? Because I was a sniper, I would take watch in the tower at 3 a.m. I was also a new guy, one of the only new guys picked for that.
3 a.m. to what time?
3 to 6 or something like that. But it was the time that I liked getting up early, but I also was sitting there and I remember the sun coming up and there was a little town close and it was like the call to prayer. It was like, and I'm sitting there smoking cigarettes and the sun's going up and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing out here, dude? Yeah, I'm like, man, wow, life comes at you fast when, you know, just really 5 years before, 5 years, that's how long it had been. I had been walking out of jail I had been on this speed bullet train, not stopping till that point.
What does responsibility feel like after, you know, fucking up so much in life, and all of a sudden you're there at 3 a.m. on this tower, looking at seeing a sunrise and a call to prayer, but you also have the responsibility for the people that are asleep behind you.
Yeah,
like one of the things that got to me, both like I've been in some fucking weird ass spaces myself, but what got to me is like I remember getting the responsibility to protect the governor, right? Mm. I had the responsibility to protect the governor of Baja, and I had all these fucking armored vehicles, and I had like 80 people under my command, and I'm like, motherfucker, these people are giving responsibilities.
Yeah.
Like, I eat cornflakes and play video games at my apartment. Yeah. Two of my plants are dead at the apartment, you know? Yeah. There's like a mattress in one corner.
Yeah.
There's like, I bought a big, like, I remember spending one of my first like major checks on this Ash from the Evil Dead action figure about that big. And I was fucking so excited about it. And like, why are these fuckers giving responsibility? Like,
yeah. Well, you know what? You've earned it because you're there, right? And that's what's interesting about it.
It's both like, holy shit. And also heavy and scary as fuck.
Yeah. It's a real moment.
That's your first deployment in Yemen. What other places do you go to working?
So that was about 7 months we were there. I came back, and then it was another, we on the SEAL teams are 18 month, at least on the other side, right? It's 18 months of workup and training, you know, professional development, platoons, this and that, unit level training, and then another deployment. And then we went to Iraq. So I was sent, and now in that time I got in trouble. You know, I got in a fight in a bar, and now I have an aggravated assault, so now I'm fighting a charge, and I have a felony charge, and all this shit.
Where's this? What happened? What happened?
Yeah, I hit a guy in a bar. You know, one time, like I said, it's only takes one time to really change your life.
Why? Like, can you talk?
Guy said something. It had been building, and he didn't like that I was there with some girl or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. And also, I was too fucked up, right? And so that was, I had lost my wits about me. So there was that piece. So I was not some victim in the situation, and it was all on video. And so, you know, I walked by, and the dude kind of like gave a kind of like spit, and I just, you know, one look.
Yeah, I understand. And also, people don't understand. You're in a position, like in these situations, where you're basically a coiled fucking spring.
Yeah.
And people add tension to it from pressure, work, training, shit happening, and you're this coiled spring. You get sent out to a deployment somewhere or work, and nothing happens, so you don't snap. But then you come out of it and some idiot somewhere decides to spit on you.
Yeah.
While you're drinking. So that.
It just one hit him and that's all it took. And next thing I know, I got a charge and this and that. So I'm fighting this case and they gave me a pretty serious charge. The plea deal was 6 years in prison plus three. And I had
an aggravated
assault charge for one punch, you know, and. You know, but there's guys who hit people once and people die and they go to prison. So, you know, I was like, okay, well, so I'm managing that. The stress level was massive. I had to get my top secret security clearance back. I had to fight this and I have an expensive lawyer and all the whole, you know, mess, which was a nightmare. But they let me deploy. They let me deploy while all this is going on. The courts did, thank God. And so I'm finally on a bird flying from Baghdad up to just south of Missoula where our mission set was to meet up with the Sunni tribes who had been displaced by ISIS, build a FOB, and then start training these three different tribes to kind of start leapfrogging and taking these strongholds back. That was the whole mission.
What are you seeing there? I mean, I get growing up in violence and fighting people and being a shitbag and all that stuff. Like growing up, I get all that. But when you start getting acquainted with death,
yeah.
That's a different thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it was weird because my enemy and some of the death that I was seeing was very familiar.
Yeah, that's
like,
wild.
We weren't in another country. We were home. And multiple times I had situations where I would look through bodies and look through faces, and yeah. I would find people that I grew up with in some of these body piles.
And that's wild for police and first responders, man, is the proximity.
Yeah.
It's real. You don't escape it.
No.
You go home and have to eat dinner, man. Yeah. And just be chill and show up again.
If anybody has had the experience of having to get completely naked and put all your clothing in a trash bag before you get home after going through some shit.
Man.
That's something that stays with you.
Yeah. That's powerful.
It's different. It's a different thing. It doesn't make it worse or bad. But like, what's your experience with that? Like when you're going through that shit, is it just coldness? You don't see it. Can't get fazed by it. You're just going through it because a lot of people that I ask these questions to now, I remember sitting in a couch with two guys that were in Afghanistan and fucking lost people there. Watching that plane with all those Afghans on the wings fly off. And I've never felt so connected to those people when they realized that all the shit they did was really for naught in a lot of ways.
That's powerful.
And it's like, I told them, like, I know how that feels like.
Yeah.
Because all the shit that I did and all the people that I lost really was, I mean, it's still on fire here in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. What was going through kind of your mind going into this field? You have shit going on back home.
Yeah.
People, like, what is that like for you?
It was a lot of pressure. I was not at my best. Definitely not. I was definitely like, the stress was getting to me, I would say. And also, but because the stress was so strong, I had the ability to disassociate a little bit.
Yeah. Which is, for people that don't know what disassociation means, or like, can you describe like a situation where you just disconnected and you look back on it and you're like, what the fuck?
I can think back of some, you know, some rough things, that, you know, some difficult, challenging things. Now, it wasn't, you know, Fallujah or stuff like that. There's other stuff going on that, you know, dude, see a lot of it heavier. But, you know, some powerful stuff that I have zero emotion about it.
Yeah.
Zero. Like, I sleep fine. I think back to it, but it doesn't create, it's like completely separate. It's the only way I can.
Yeah. Some people have the ability to put like a, I don't know, it's like a, almost like an autopilot, I guess, on or.
That's a good way to talk about
yeah.
it. Yeah. It's like yeah. you're seeing it, like, you're doing it, it's like there, but then it's just kind of.
So, yeah, sometimes I remember shit that I went through and it's like some fucking horrific shit that people will ask me like, you were there for that? Yeah. And you think back upon it and you're just like, you're on autopilot, yeah. you know? Mm-hmm. You don't have time to appreciate the gravity or the severity of what you're doing. Or
That's a good way to say it. Yeah, yeah, you don't even appreciate the gravity of it.
Yeah, and I don't know, for me, a lot of the weight of it came in later. But you just had to go through.
You know, it probably manifests itself in some other ways that I'm not yeah. even really aware of. Yeah, I'm sure.
The whole manifest, like, again, for me, it was, I mean, I was an alcoholic from the time I got into that line of work till through almost 4 years, 3 years now that I've been off the booze. But I remember for me, I had the realization of it, the weight of it. When I had a kid.
Oh, I could see that.
Because now it's like, I can give less of a shit about what happens to me. Or like, I'm fucking like, yeah, canon father.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. But now there's like.
So, yeah, somebody else you're responsible for.
Stakes. So I'm like, holy shit. And then you think back on all the people in the past that went away or got put away.
Yeah.
Who had the same kind of responsibility. So the gravity of what you did. Starts kind of like,
whoa, wow, yeah, I could see that, the layered nature of it.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And at least for me, injury, recovery, and not having much to do now because you run so much in your life to get to a point where you have some sort of stability so you can fucking chill out or rest, and that's when it all fucking just comes.
Oh yeah,
that's when it. It visits you.
That is actively, I have to combat that.
Yeah, because it visits you if you're...
It visits you. It visits you. That's good.
It visits you. Yeah. I describe it to people that... I mean, it's PTSD. A lot of it is PTSD on my end, because I fucking went through some shit. It shows up at, like, at least for me, because there's a lot of guilt there. It shows up for me when I am in a place where I've, like, a good place, I guess. It was somewhere in Texas, surrounded by friends. We just got done doing a shooting class. And Raul Martinez is there, a guy that deployed to Chicago PD guy. Amazing dude, savage. He's one of the first guys I've asked, would you want to go back to that? Yeah, I'll go back to war any day. It's fucking made from a different cloth, I guess. Some students there, friends. Everybody's having fun. They're making, doing a barbecue after a class. It's warm, and somebody hands me this ice cold glass of lemonade. And I'm just like, fucking, this is great. And then somebody lets off a few rounds. Like in a field, and the paper target falls over, so the dude jokingly just runs to it and just puts a few rounds into it in the ground.
Yeah,
and it visits me.
Whoa!
This memory of seeing these kids on a traffic camera. We found about 14 kids. When I say kids, I mean between 15 and maybe the oldest one was 19. Get ripped out of their houses, get piled into this van. They stopped out on a roadside, and there's a camera there. And they were filmed. And in the audio, you can see them pleading for their lives as they get shot individually, one by one, on the ground. Hmm. And I remember the mothers arriving to the murder scene while we were there. And that shit just, I mean.
What was the reason?
They were working for one side.
Okay.
And I just have this gravity of the moment of all the mothers arriving. And they don't know if you're responsible. You're there standing with a rifle and their kids are.
Yeah. They're trying to make sense of something that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I just remember getting my face
scratched out
from one. And I don't know. That's how it visits me. You know, when you're in a fucking great spot and you just have, it's almost like you try and figure out something to ruin that moment.
Well, because that's what it is. It's like this self-sabotaging.
But it's like,
how dare you feel good about it? Don't you remember?
It comes from nowhere. And I've met people that are like, they've managed to engage that autopilot for a long period. I don't know. Maybe some of the head injuries made me lose that power. You're fighting this fucking case. It's waiting for you. Mm. It's waiting for you. What happens between that time you're out there and you come back?
Yeah, so everyone was I volunteered to stay. So I volunteered to stay. They were like, we need somebody to stay for 3 months. And so I volunteered. That kicked the can down the road. Now, I ended up not staying, but the paperwork went through. So the court date got pushed. And that gave me some more time. I'm just trying to kick the can down the road because I have a trial. Like, they haven't budged yet. So long story short, as I come back and, you know, I'm going through some stuff and I have a relationship that's kind of breaking apart. And, you know, I find out she's on heroin and I'm like, oh, dude. So like something. And so she goes away and I have some stuff going on. And so
your life in general.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going, man, back in Iraq, not wanting to get a house. So I'm at my mom's house as a Navy SEAL because I don't know if I'm going away. And so,
yeah, you don't want to fucking
build my life up when I'm like, I asked my attorney, you know, God bless him. He would shoot me straight. I go, should I like prepare? He goes, you might burn for this.
Yeah.
He was good, man. My trial's coming, you know, trial day comes. I'm at the bar, I'm burning in. I'm in my dress blues, like I'm walking the plank, you know, coming in from the strip club pretty much. And my lawyer calls me, you know, hey, where are you? I'm like, hey, I'm heading down to the courthouse right now, you know. And he goes, hey, we got good news. We're going to get maxed out misdemeanors, multiple. So it's like 4 years supervised probation. So it's pretty much as maxed out as they could get. You got to pay this guy all this money or that's the only way we can keep this not a felony. I said, deal.
For one fucking
pay. I said, deal. So I wrote him I sold my truck. And wrote him my whole Iraq check. But I was like, fine, a misdemeanor. At least I can maintain my career. Because that was the only, I was willing to take it. Here's the nice thing. The stories we tell ourselves. I was willing to take it to the box and go to prison. Because all I cared about was my SEAL career. My life was over if I lost my SEAL career.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't care if I go to prison. That was the only thing I care about is my SEAL career. So that gave me a lot of leverage because I just would not budge. So that's the deal that they gave me. And so I went to Idaho jail for a couple weeks, man, you know, and paid the money. That was it. And I got out and supervised probation. And there was some weird terms and it was very strict. I wasn't supposed to be able to drink and this and that. And I ended up fucking that up 3 months later and that's kind of what ended up kind of being the nail in my coffin. It was 2 years later, actually. So 2 years later.
You were under the supervised probation. 2 years later, you find yourself.
Yeah, So I'm under supervised probation and. Well, it was a few months after that all went down that, you know, I get out of getting a little altercation, not a fight or anything. I'm in a golf cart that's not mine at a concert and the cops pull me over and it just snowballed. Now I got a German Shepherd biting my ass. I'm like, you know, just creating havoc, right? Self-sabotaging to the maximum after I just got out of all this shit.
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. The only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the Dead Drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing urban wear, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
Thinking back on it now, like, we're the self-sabotaging aspect of it. Like, it's, for me, it's a, it's faceless, it's voiceless. You're like, it's not like a, it's not like a voice in your back of your head, like, oh, Ed, let's just go drink that peach schnapps in the on the table and then go outside and see what we can figure. It's not that.
No.
It's like a moment where you should stop yourself.
Yeah.
But you just find yourself witnessing yourself just.
And you can't.
You just do it. You're just, I'm just doing it.
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's, you, that's such an interesting way you brought it up. It's like, how do you dissect it? It's like this series of decisions that you're like, okay. And there's always this kind of voice of like, man, yeah, should you? Or, but it gets, we get, and I've gotten so much better at the control, the impulse control of recognizing that negotiation. Like, man, probably shouldn't, bro. You're on probation. But I'm like, yeah, yeah, it's good, right? It's not good. It's every, it's good until it's not good. And that was exactly what happened. And I ended up not getting kicked out of the SEAL teams. For that, it was actually a failed steroid test is what got me is of all that failed. I was beating the case again. I worked some contacts and I had another misdemeanor and they actually just switched it on the rug because I hadn't really done anything. But long story short, they go, hey, we're going to steroid test this guy. There's no fucking way. They sent it to the Olympic Testing Center in like UCLA. And I lit every fucking light on that motherfucker up.
Which we're like here where it's hindsight.
Yeah.
Thinking back on it. You're not the only fucker.
You know, it's on there. It wasn't, you know, people say, was it as widespread? I go, no. And it wasn't like some culture either. Like people are saying, oh, it's a culture. No. I mean, I did a lot of my shit on my own. All my guys were closest, weren't on shit. And I did it for selfish reasons, right? I was doing for aesthetics a lot of times. And yeah, I performed a little better, or I thought. But I knew it was against the rules and I did it anyway. And that was just the bottom line. And I rolled the dice, and that's pretty much what I said in my little outro, and they gave me a general discharge. So that was beautiful on this commanding officer. SEAL
but it's
seven.
Over. But it's over.
But it's done. It's and now, done. But in the weird way, that little incident got me off probation. Ironically, I served some more time back in Idaho where I violated. They had federal marshals in a van trying to extradite me. It was this whole thing. I ended up getting through it all, and I walk out of jail. Free and clear. No probation, no nothing. And I started moving into the rest of my life.
Now, like when I talked to Eddie about his issues, the special treatment he got, which basically fucked with him because of who he was.
Yeah.
Or what he represented.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get it? Do you experience some of that while they were fucking coming after you? Because were they trying to make a fucking example out of you?
Initially, the prosecuting attorney was. They're like, "Hey, this SEAL here, it was on the news. It's on the this guy can't be coming in here punching PR locals, that type of thing."
Yeah.
So they tried to grill me a little bit, but over time, you know, lawyers changed and stuff, and we got some good people in, and they weren't trying to make him. I think they really actually hooked me up. But even in jail, the cops were cool. They were like, "Hey, we're not going to put this guy in handcuffs." They didn't handcuff me out of the thing. They're like, "Cool." And then while there, I got pushed and tested a little bit. Most of the COs were good. The inmates weren't a problem, you know, and when my time, but I just immediately got on a program, was like doing stairs, working out, kind of just, I just immediately lock in.
You were just basically back at you were back at the lobby.
I go lock in. I go.
You were back at the lobby again.
right back in the lobby, dude. I go ding and I go, okay. And it's actually scary how fast I can kind of lock into a program because I'm like, okay, cool. And that's been proven in any institution. I could really get my schedule reset, but then it was really when I got in the Legion, and we'll get into it, is what am I doing that's fucking this up, right? Why do I keep building up and ripping everything down?
You were part of one of the most elite units on the planet, did shit that not a lot of people can do. You had all that trust. You had all that responsibility. You were there, and all of a sudden, punch a dude once and you did this that you probably shouldn't have been doing, and now it's gone.
Now
you're
it's
back
gone.
At the lobby.
That was back at the lobby. That was a wild feeling when I realized, bro, I gave it all away. I didn't even it wasn't taken from me. I gave it away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's on. It's like you can't even fucking blame anybody.
No,
you're just.
I have other homies, you know. Some names you might know that, you know, things happen externally.
People were trying
to. I got nobody to blame.
Like
I got fucking nobody to blame.
You just fucked yourself. Like the self, for people that, the self-sabotage aspect of it, it's like, again, it's like you witness yourself just doing shit and there's always that voice telling you don't do it, but you're fucking.
Because you're like, it's not, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
That's that confidence piece, which is dangerous. And it's always when you're peaking, for people listening, working with clients and stuff, I notice now, I always tell guys, and they're like, man, I'm feeling good. I got a new job and this. I go, stop.
Be careful.
I go, stop. Slow it the fuck down. This is the time, man. If you get that promotion, you get that. It's not the time to go celebrate.
Yeah.
It's always in the celebratory moods that I've
It's the allowances we give ourselves in that victory dance that usually.
Ooh, man, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. Speed up until you start fucking up and then slow down until you stop fucking up. But somewhere in the middle of that, there's efficacy, I guess. So again, you're back at the lobby. You're trying to figure
back
out.
At the lobby.
That's like I've been back at the lobby. Like, I know what that is. Where you're like, when you look at somebody at the beginning, like when you're the guy at the beginning and you're at the peak of it and looking back at the people at the beginning, all of a sudden you fuck up in somewhere when you're back at the lobby.
Oh, man.
You're trying to dissect who your enemy is. There's nobody to blame but yourself.
Yeah.
I have had shit happen to me, like alcoholism, losing my marriage and all that shit. We're like the same thing. Like, I have this fucking rage, like, motherfucker, who can I? And you're like, how can you reach into yourself and pull that shit out?
Yeah.
Or you come to this wall where you're like, hey, I should probably stop drinking myself to death. Mm. Yeah, and you have this agreement with yourself. Yeah, tomorrow we start.
Yeah.
And then 3 days later, something bad happens and you're fucking downing 4 cans of Foster's.
Yeah.
Outside of a Circle K.
Yeah. That's very specific. Yeah. I wonder why.
And then you come off it and you renegotiate and then you're there again.
Yep.
What breaks that for you?
Well, I had a powerful 2 years where immediately when I got out of the SEAL teams, man, I was like, all right, the reins are off. Nothing. I have nobody to be responsible for now. And I was also successful still. I stepped right into a supervisor position at a big private developer, residential developer. Man, but I was doing Adderall every day. I was like, oh, I'm more productive. But now I'm taking Xanax at night, take the edge off, and I'm drinking at night, and I'm smoking weed every day. But at night. Right, I'm not doing it during the day.
You're rewarding yourself. This is your time.
Yeah,
I need it to relax. I deserve this.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good.
And
yeah, I'm functional.
Look at all the success. I can point to it. I got the girl and the house and this and that. I'm like, cool. And then we moved into the cannabis space, which is ironic. Back to weed, where it became legal. So we launched I did a lateral move, took a little risk, and then I started working for this venture capitalist who we were starting a cannabis distribution company. So now I'm the CEO of that. Now I'm pitching decks and now I'm, you know, kind of the big cheese.
Are you partaking in the product?
You know, I was so busy. I was so
busy.
You're
not smoking weed. You're mostly.
Not really. I would smoke like a blunt, like, you know, maybe at night, you know, every once in a while. But I also stacked the fentanyl habit.
Yeah.
On top of it. Just for good shits and giggles, man.
Where did that come in?
And I was snorting. I was just. It was emotional pain.
But like, where did it appear? Like who showed up?
I knew drug dealers and shit. And so it was actually opioid. It was actually like Percocet. But then I was like, man, if I could get fentanyl, I'll do that. But it was at night. And I wasn't just like, whatever. I was doing emails. I would snort some and then do emails and then be working.
As somebody that's done, you said you perks, right?
Yeah.
And then fent.
Yeah.
Can you describe the difference? And
yeah,
feeling?
I went fucking tits up on fent probably multiple times, man.
When you say tits, like, how does it, people that don't, there's a lot of people out there that I mean, I grew up.
It's dangerous.
I grew up in the day and age where somebody would hand you a pill and you'd be like, "Oh, cool," and you pop it in your mouth. But it's weird that those days are gone now.
It's fentanyl's so powerful. Like,
what is it?
It felt great. That's the dangerous part. Is it was like immediate antidepressant, but I wasn't really depressed. I just liked feeling better. And it's
euphoric.
Euphoric.
It's like pissing in a cool pool in a way.
Yeah, it was euphoric. I felt good. I was also on Adderall too, so I was up too. So I had all wildly imbalanced. Staying up till 3, doing emails, and then getting up, taking Adderall, and going. And I wasn't doing it during the day.
What about all the discipline you learned?
And I was still going to the gym. And that was like all this.
So you have this rule set and square box.
Justification all over the place.
But you're doing fentanyl. But look at the success.
Yeah, look, I could point to this, and I'm doing this.
Dude, fucking fentanyl.
And, you know, I would, you know, there was a couple times, and, you know, I pass out, cut open my chin, wake up in blood, and wipe it all off and just go to it and just get it stitched up and go to a meeting and pitch and be like, what the fuck's up? I'm like, you know, and just totally like, I totally just didn't pass out and like smash my face. And that's and then I did that for a year. So it was 2 years to the day where I pretty much fell on my face for the final time. And it was just like the VC boss kind of found out about it. It was just, you know, when it all falls apart.
Yeah, whenever you get that intervention.
It was like kind of the intervention, but I got stitched up and my girlfriend at the time was like screaming, found me. And it was the final straw. And everything kind of got pulled apart where now I got no job, got no money, got no this, got no title, which had always been my thing that I could hide behind the title of. And now I got nothing. And I was in Hawaii. I moved to Hawaii for a few months to kind of like just get away from everything. And I got off it. Just cold turkey. I was like, I got to get off this shit. Like, that was brutal, man.
Like, it's powerful opiate.
Yeah.
And detoxing from that shit is...
I didn't sleep for a week.
It's another Russian roulette.
I did not sleep
a
wink.
It's another single bullet in a revolver spinning in a wheel if you're trying to do that shit cold turkey.
It was... I was in paradise and I was in hell. It was a very weird juxtaposition.
How long till the withdrawals? Symptoms come in?
It was like 2 days when I really started to feel it. You know, and here's the funny thing. I was like, I'm not addicted. Yeah. I could stop anytime. And then I realized I was absolutely like other things I shed pretty easily. You know, whatever that I cut that stuff out like nothing.
Yeah.
But that had like its hooks in me physically. And that's when, a couple days I felt it.
For people that have never gone through withdrawals themselves, like it's different for everybody. For me, it's like with alcohol, like I almost fucking died.
Really?
Yeah. Because I was like,
now you were getting this. You were on the sauce.
I'd do training events across the country, and I would do Saturday, Sunday classes. And on Saturday, students would take me out to dinner.
Yeah.
And they would try to like get me drunk.
Yeah.
And I'd be fucking looking at them just downing a bottle of tequila and being unfazed.
Yeah.
And some students wouldn't show up the next day because they were, you know,
yeah,
hungover and shit like that. I would be just fresh. And I thought that was like something to admire.
Yeah.
Most of that.
Yeah.
I was
We've all been in those spots.
But for me, it's this migraine. My body wants to just fucking drop dead. Pressure in my chest. Mm. The shakes came in. And you're just looking for relief.
Yeah, relief.
And you're trying to justify it. Maybe one more drink. Maybe drink the mouthwash.
Just take the edge off.
Maybe drink the mouthwash.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're trying to...
Yeah, anything.
So for you, you say 2 days and that's when it's...
Started to kick in. Yeah, and that's when I started to feel like I needed to crawl out of my skin. Like I couldn't.
And it's just you. There's nobody keeping you there on. You're trying to fucking do the shit yourself.
I was like crawling out of my skin. I was like had no weed and I had nothing. So I was like trying to find some homeless kid. I was like, dude, do you have any weed? He gave me some LSD and a fucking thing. I was like anything to cut, this was an interesting thing because I had a moment with God during this like time, this day. That like showed me my path of like, dude, I gotta finish my tattoos. I gotta get my body right. I gotta go in the Foreign Legion. I saw all this coming off of opioids on LSD. It was a very like powerful time. He drove me to this. spot called Waipao Valley. It's where they hit King Kamehameha, middle of the night.
Who is this fucking kid?
I think he's a ghost, man, or something, because I never saw him again. He was like, last night I was sleeping behind a dumpster, and now I drove him to a
bar. So this kid, this random kid.
I drove him down the most steep residential road in the United States, which is Waipao Valley. It was pitch black. I had no idea where I was going, and I come into this ravine. I drop him off at a farm he was going to start working at, middle of the night, and that place is still very special to me. I had this moment where I'm like, all right, everything's going to be okay. It was like, everything's going to be all right.
What was it? Like, I've had experiences with hallucinogenics myself, and I've talked to God sober more so than in that. But for you, you're coming off. I mean, opiates are fucking.
And I was just going into the withdrawals. I was like first day in, which and was unique.
I've heard, you know, acid. I've done a DMT, boofo, mushrooms. I've done, you name it. I've done it, except ayahuasca. I don't believe in that. Personally, I think it's just a very expensive diarrhea. Mm. I'm all about the unearned, like wisdom has to be earned on my end.
Yeah.
So like when I took bufo, which is basically toad.
Yeah.
I had to fast. I had to fucking go in, like to go on a hike into the desert.
Cool.
If I could do this whole fucking thing with intention. But when you describe this voice that comes that everything's gonna be okay, what makes you you talk about divine, God? What makes you think it's God this time?
Because I truly think that authentic voice that speaks to us is that divine voice. I don't think that we have our own thoughts are that. It's we're who hears it.
Yeah.
And so I've always felt a connection with a guiding force, right? I'm more like universal principle. Like I always think that universal laws is synonymous with Lord, right? It's all these scriptures are teaching us the same thing. It's the application and understanding of universal law, right? And there, if you're a guiding omnipotent being, how would you disseminate the information? Every culture drinks it different, right? And so, and some people need certain things to understand it. For me, I've always had a knowing, right? And this was just this voice that goes, hey man, you're about to go through it. This was the voice. It was not like some, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It was stand the fuck by. Then everything's going to be okay. It was a calm before the storm.
One of the struggles that I've had in my whole life, and I was pretty godless for most of my career. And I had some issues with the church early on when I was a kid. But I would always think that how can there be a God if I just went through all this shit, right? But then somebody at some point told me, like, yeah, do you feel like if there was a God, that the devil was fucking with you? It's like, yeah, because when you're on the devil's path, that motherfucker just leaves you alone.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
It's when you're on the other one, that's when he fucks with you.
The devil doesn't fuck with people at the bottom.
Nope.
Fucks people going up and right at the top.
If you're on a mission, that's when he shows up.
Ooh, that's powerful. They got the chills, man. That's powerful. But that's true.
I mean, that's thinking it's a good idea to go drinking and punching a dude in the punching a dude once. That's thinking you deserve a little fent before you.
Yeah, that's off the aligned path.
Yeah,
it's off of the aligned. You're going against your conscience, that authentic voice.
Yeah,
it's not like. You know, it's the negotiational voice. Yeah, you're listening to that.
I mean, when I look back at it, and my family has this whole family legend around the devil. My great grandfather used to be was Pancho Villa's most trusted official.
Man, badass.
When he was assassinated in El Parral, there's a famous picture of him. Pancho Villa's dead in the front seat. And there's a dude hanging out of the car like this. And that was my great-grandfather.
Wow.
Rumor, family legend is that he was a shitbag and he cut a deal or something like that. And the devil's been chasing us ever since. Mm. You know, it's a whole kind of family lore. So I always had that in the back of my mind. And like when you go through all that shit and you're looking back at it, you're trying to like figure out, you know.
Yeah.
you feel godless, or that God has abandoned you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's exactly how it should feel.
Yeah.
Like we don't get this theological. I guess we've lost some of that spirituality. You know, I see it in fucking tribal people when they go on spirit quests and shit like that. The whole aspect of being abandoned.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it should feel.
Yeah, alone. You're like, feel alone.
And when you're really fucking quiet after you're at the bottom of that hill, that's where you heard it, right?
Yeah. You have to get humble to get connected.
Yeah, he's not going to show up, but like, he's not going to show
up. Not
with
the noise, not with the distraction. Your destiny whispers at you, right? It doesn't shout.
So you're just at the end of this process of self-sabotage,
yeah,
of reaching these, doing these fucking superhuman acts of people laughing at you, of how absurd your life is.
Yeah.
And you're at this hill now. What is this voice telling you?
It was like, everything's going to be all right. And it was like, stand by. It's coming. It's coming. And I get the chills when I think about it, because it's like, you're about to go through another crucible. I didn't know what that meant exactly, yeah, but I had this like notion what it meant. I was like, I have to go through another military selection and I have to go in the Foreign Legion. It was that like clear.
Where did that?
I knew about the Foreign Legion as a child. And I always, when I started to try to get in the United States military, it came on my radar again, because I was like, if I can't get in the military,
that's going to be plan
that's
B.
Plan, that's my look red, grab red. Yeah. Yeah. And so this, I was at that point. Look, and so I, yeah,
that's from Free Falls.
Yeah, yeah, that was my look red, grab red, man.
I went through that shit in Hamul.
Nice. Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Why?
Were you at Skydive San Diego?
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
At the Lemon Drop Cafe?
Yeah.
Yeah, the SEALs set that.
That's better.
Fuck that. Yeah. Fuck all that jumping out of place shit.
I'm not into it. Yeah, I'm not into it, man.
No, oh, fuck that. But the loving response that divinity gives you, you know, people can call it whatever they want.
Yeah.
I always get into these arguments with people. Like, they want to name it or box it somehow. Whatever it is told you, like, hey, everything's going to be all right. But you're about to go through it.
You're about to go through it. And then that week was a storm, which I was coming off fentanyl. So mind you, I'm coming down. Now I'm not sleeping. I'm swelling up. I had to take myself to the emergency room to get some Benadryl or something, just because I couldn't sleep. And I was maxing out. I was in the sauna. I was working out. Then I come out of it, though.
It's like, this is you in the debt. You're, it's, who's going to pick you up at the hospital?
Man, I took myself to the urgent care and just like.
Who picked you up?
No, I drove myself. And then I just drove myself back home.
Who knew you were there?
Just my mom, but I was by myself, right? Because I was on the Big Island of Hawaii.
That's an aspect of it that people just.
Yeah, I was totally by myself, which I actually needed. I needed to not talk to anybody. It was like, I didn't have the emotional bandwidth to fucking involve anybody. I cut my phone. I did not have it. Which I'm sure people would understand, when your emotional bandwidth is just toast. I was like all involved. But I started to come off, and then I was like, all right, working back out again. But I was still drinking every day and doing Adderall and Xanax. But now that at least I shed one major piece.
It's a giant one. And yeah, like, people trying to come off everything at once.
Man, more power to them. But for me, I didn't psychologically understand I needed to yet. But I knew, I was like, okay, now I started to develop a plan. I'm like, I'm going to go in the Foreign Legion. Okay, I'm going to train a little bit. I'm going to try to, but I was still kind of waiting to see if some of the other professional pieces, I'd get my like,
yeah,
that call back, and like, never came. And nothing. So now I'm out of money.
Everything starts clear.
Now I'm out of money. And now it's starting to become clear to me that I'm like really cut off and done, like, right, with my whole life. So now I don't have a hotel room or an Airbnb or an apartment or nothing. And I realize I'm fucking broke. I got no gas in my truck, and I fucking have no money.
Where are you when you
have- And I was dropping my buddy Jimmy Watson off. Shout out to Jimmy, who had come out to me. We'll get him talking to you. But badass dude, he had just come. He was dealing with some stuff with some other three-letter agencies and shit, which he'll get into in his story. But I go, I need to drive to the jungle and just park where nobody's going to fuck with me, because I'm going to run out of gas and I got no money. So I got to figure out what the hell's going on. I drove, I parked in Pahoa, Hawaii, on the jungle near where the volcano's erupting. And I just parked, man. And I remember parking, turning my key to my truck, and it just being dead quiet. And I sat there for 3 days. Three fucking days, man. No food, no water. It's just sipping on like vodka. And I just would go for little walks in the jungle shirtless and just going, what the fuck am I going to do? I go, this is how it happens.
Yeah.
And I had a sawed-off shotgun in my truck. And I was thinking about killing myself for 3 days. I go, man, fuck this, dude. I'm just tired. Which if anybody's, you know, experienced that, I'm sure any motherfuckers who's pushed has felt this like, dude, I'm tired, man.
Yeah, the just like exhaustion of a sense that is lifelong.
Whoa, yeah.
It's not like I'm exhausted from the day. I'm not exhausted from the week.
That's what I'm said.
I'm exhausted from the first time. I just have memories now.
I like how you said that. It was just, I'm so tired of trying to achieve.
Yeah, you're like... It's like it's like when you're, I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, I fell into a well, like a dry well.
Okay.
Because I was a fucking crazy ass fucking kid. I used to go out hunting early morning with a .22 rifle.
Okay.
In the morning, rabbits are kind of dumb, adapting from the dark to the light. So that's when you would fuck them.
Yeah.
So you see that white tail, you know, jackrabbits, you can't eat them, but white ones. White tails, you can shoot the fuckers, right? So I would go out really early, and I would vary my routes because these fucking things are smart. You know, they get used to like where I would walk through. So I remember just walking through this field, and there's a fucking well. I didn't know. Yeah. I was just fucking walking, and all of a sudden I'm like, and I could like the sky, the big black starry sky, turned into just a disc above me.
Yeah, damn.
And I'm like,
yeah. Yeah,
landed. It's fucking gone.
Yeah.
Fucking rattlesnakes in there in the fucking hole with me. I keep trying to climb out. And it's, you know, I'm trying to do the Spider-Man thing.
Damn.
And you keep fucking falling down. I thought I had spider webs in my hands.
Yeah.
It was the skin peeled off my hand.
Damn.
On my way down. And I remember just having this moment, like an hour in, where I'm like, fuck.
Damn.
I got tired of screaming. I was like, I just sat down.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I just sat down. I found this piece of wood in there. It was part of the ladder that used to be in there.
Mm.
And I started fucking making holes on the sides. So instead of like putting my feet on the sides, I would actually have foot
holes. Somewhere to put,
So I just started making my way up. Two and a half hours later, I was out.
Damn, dude, just whittled your way out.
But like, I remember that hour though. That first hour when I was like, well,
gathering your self.
Years later, I found myself in a different type of hole.
Mm-hmm.
Just got done working here and doing this blazing career in law enforcement that just. Was like every possible event in this field that I was in and every possible thing that I should have fucking died and I somehow made it through. And I, now I'm in a fucking ranch somewhere trying to get off alcohol.
Yeah.
And same thing with me. There was a shotgun too, a Mossberg. It wasn't sawed off.
Interesting.
It was a Mossberg shotgun. And I remember having this weird moment where I was trying to isolate.
Yeah.
And all I had with me was this fucking Zune with a bunch of music on there. Mm. And I had like five Nirvana songs on there. And I just would think about Kurt Cobain.
Yeah.
And for people that think it's like the easy way out, blowing your fucking head off there's nothing easy about fucking killing yourself.
No, man. It's a heavy.
Coming to that.
Yeah. It's a heavy process.
And. It's the whole being exhausted of this, I guess, trying in different ways to get a specific outcome and it all, basically, you're still at the bottom of the well over, again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
But that's the exhaustion that we speak about. So you're in the jungle with a sawed-off shotgun.
It's powerful about that. Well, dude, you got me. I was there. I was in that well, man, and it was this moment. Now on the third day, I had this moment where that voice kind of came back when it was like, dude, you're being a fucking pussy. And that's, I had this moment where it was, dude, your inner dialogue is me, 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 I. You go, you have a mom, you have a sister. What's their life going to be like? Right? Sack up. I go, all right. And I had this, and I go, all right, I'm going to the French Foreign Legion. And I just, for whatever reason, it took me that long to kind of realize that no call's coming. Yeah. Nobody's coming to save me. That I'm not getting that new opportunity. I had burned all the bridges. Now it's time to sack up. So I had no money. So I called my mom first. I go, mom, I have a plan. So here it is. And she goes, well, how are you going to do it? I said, I'm going to figure it out. Hang up. I immediately called. I just wanted to let her know I was fine, right? Because I had to cut off. And then I called two fast cash loan places, you know, two $500 cash fast loans. I had like my credit was fucked at the time. And I go, okay. And they gave it to me. I probably paid $4,000 for it later, you know, like I'll deal with it later. But I got my flight, man. And I went to France and, you know, that's what I joined the French Foreign Legion.
But people hear about the French Foreign Legion. And I remember a few of our guys after we got defunded and defunct. Like some of them went that route. There's all this romanticism about it. Movies and fuck. I remember watching this Van Damme movie about him joining the French Foreign Legion and shit like that. It is the reputation of it is if it's a place for criminals to go and hide. It's like the end of the line for some people, last option.
And it's definitely still that.
There's this legendary gate, right?
And that's where I went.
Can you describe this gate for people? I've met a few people that are legionnaires, and one of them had that tattooed on him, and he told me about this.
Yeah.
So can you describe that moment absolutely. Where you're in front of this gate?
Yeah. So it's at Fort Nogent, Paris. There's two spots. This spot I went to, and the gate you're referring to is Fort Nogent, Paris, east skirts of the east side Paris, and it's like a medieval castle. It's a small base. It's a Foreign Legion base, La Légion Étrangère, which is, you know, Foreign Legion. And that says Légion Étrangère on the front. It's like a wood iron gate. It looks just like a medieval castle, all that same kind of stone. And it's right kind of attached to a neighborhood, right? Just a lower class neighborhood. But you walk and get off the train and there's nothing around military. And then you just walk up to this gate, man. And the whole process is there's no application. No, you don't call ahead and make an appointment, man.
You're not there with a folder with all your paperwork.
I did bring I brought a folder. Some people don't, but I have my black duffel bag, knocked on the door.
But there's nobody waiting for you. You didn't call ahead.
There's nothing like that. It is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. You go there on Christmas Day and knock on the door. Yep. And so I went in and a guy with a green beret, a Mexican dude, actually, Mexican legionnaire, opened up the door. He had a rifle.
Might have been one of my friends.
Yeah, he had a rifle on a FAMAS, and he goes, what's that? I said, je suis ici pour la Légion, you know, what I had Googled before I went in there. He goes, passport, gave him my passport. He told me to go sit the fuck down, you know, take off my fucking hat. You know, enlève ton chapeau. And I took it off and I went and sat, and I remember sitting in this room. It was just me. It was a Sunday night, October again, 2019, and it was raining, and it was the hunter's full moon, man. I make my shit poetic, right? But it was that, and I just leaned my head back, and all the rocks, like, from the crumbled and fell all over me, and I remember just having this moment going, well, this is going to be a fucking long go, man. Yeah.
and for people that don't know, this is not... You know, this is not first world military in the U.S.
That's good knowledge. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Eastern Bloc roots. A lot of Ukrainians, a lot of, you know, you got some Russians, you got Romanians, and it's old German kind of.
Cultural stronghold.
It's in France, but it is not France.
What are the attitudes towards you? Like, are you speaking about your background? Are they kind of figuring?
I wasn't waving a flag. I didn't want more heat. I wanted to stay gray man as possible.
Yeah.
So I came in and, you know, I gave my passport. I did have my DD-214. So at least the powers that be. I was trying to get selected. They only take one out of 15 people, which is a lot of people don't know. And the interview process is the most important. So then the Ukrainian chef, he's like a chief, came in and picked me up and walked me back to this back barracks room. It's like you walk into this courtyard and through another alley, through another tunnel, and then to this barracks building. And he said, get up on the fucking pull-up bar. So Sunday night, I get up on the pull-up bar. I see a bunch of dudes down the hallway kind of scoping me out. You know, it's that kind of like institutionalized setup. I do the pull-ups. They give me an IQ test, preliminary, search my bag, and then told me to go fucking lay down. And that was kind of my start into the process.
How many pull-ups are they asking for?
I think at least want to see 10 dead hangs, but I did probably 15. He told me jump off, something like that.
Yeah. And again, this is not welcoming. Nobody's there kind of monitoring your safety. This is like a cold reception.
It's like prison. You're walking into you're in civilian clothes. They don't know who the fuck you are. They're still trying to figure out who the fuck these people are.
Yeah.
Are you a terrorist? Are you a sexual predator? They don't know who you are. What are you running? Everyone's in nobody's in there as a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
They know that. And there's three types of people that join the Foreign Legion. This is the machine of war, machine de guerre, the guy who's in there looking for some more action, and their militaries don't have
the opportunities.
The operational capacity. So there's those guys. Then some dark hole in Russia coming out, you know. Then you have the guys who are just the pragmatists. They're doing it for the money and the nationality.
Yeah. Right?
You got a lot of Nepalese guys like that from all the countries, but they're like, I'm doing it for the money and the nationality.
Which you get after how long?
7 years. So, you got to do minimum 7, then you request naturalization in that. And so it's a process.